Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
No Sleepers.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit. It's your girl Ray for a feat.
And your boy Alex Reeves.
Hey!
And we've got an amazing guest in the studio with us today. Fantastic.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Dre. I'm an activist and honored to be here.
Yep.
Hello.
Amazing.
And you have a podcast. Pod Save the People.
Pod Save the People.
That's it. I was like, that's so cool.
I went to Pod Save America first and I was like, I just don't hear Dre. I just don't hear him. And so I was like,
we're
okay.
All the same family.
Yeah.
How you been?
Good. I'm like a little jet lagged. Yeah. I was saying before is that when I came to London before, I was like, it's always rainy and dreary.
And when did you come?
I don't know. It was rainy and dreary every time. But this time I'm like,
it's nice. I'm
a big fan. I do. I'm sure that the people I meet are tired of me asking about Princess Diana, but she was like the only British person I knew as a kid. So like everybody, I'm like, do you remember where you were when Princess Diana died?
Oh my God.
I'm like that, like stereotypical
in school
American.
Or something.
I'm like, do you remember the announcements or like?
No, it's so weird that Americans latch on to maybe just one thing that reminds them. Like, so when we had Tommy Adeyemi 2 weeks ago, she was like,
"Who's great?"
She's fantastic.
And the first thing I'm like, Harry Potter.
Yeah, she's got Harry Potter. Yep.
So like that is her big thing. That is quite
Princess Diana is mine. I'm literally like, I want to know what the streets look like. I want to know did they interrupt school for you?
Yeah.
Like, I remember driving through the city actually, like to go to the memorial, like you know when everybody's laying flowers down.
You know I'm an immigrant, so I really don't know.
Oh, you're going. Yeah. they were laying flowers down. On
when
the mall,
die?
90
blasphemous. I'm kidding.
I'm so black. Wait, 92 or 93 when I was born?
No.
Oh shit. Okay.
You're definitely alive.
You're definitely alive when she was.
Oh shit.
Anyway, I don't know.
She was the people's princess.
She
I mean, kidding.
Know,
that
R.
is
R.
like
R.
what
R.
we saw on TV.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
There we go.
Who knows how it really was? But I'm like fascinated by her.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She was fantastic.
And Megan will be the new princess.
She's channeling. She's channeling Diana's energy.
Who, Megan?
Right. Yeah, Megan's
she's
very
like,
much
listen,
like
media. I'm not gonna respond to any of your bullshit.
I'm not doing it.
I'm not doing it.
I'm not playing your little games.
Yeah, you're not gonna see my baby. She's literally like she's not gonna show us. So no. Normally when like the kids like the royal babies are born or whatever, they you know they give birth and then they have a cameo photo
like,
cameo outside.
Kate came out after giving birth
like,
and was standing
day.
There.
So they
like,
always like they always oh, my baby.
Every
like,
child
she already said no.
She's like no. She's like we're gonna spend some private time with the family and then when we decide we will drop pictures.
Gonna have
you're not gonna see me looking all
gonna have yeah, haggard and
haggard and shit and I'm like you go girl.
She's like she's gonna have American midwives. She's gonna give the child an African name.
I don't,
these people are not ready. Yes,
listen, I don't
go get Megan.
There is no way this baby is getting an African name.
You know, Megan said, "I'm Tom. It's time." Megan said, "Y'all done colonized the whole world. The least I'ma do is name the baby something." Go ahead.
Did you watch the wedding? Did you watch the wedding?
Did I watch it? Oh, a snippets. I mean, we couldn't avoid it. It was like everywhere.
Yeah.
So a little bit. I didn't watch again. because Princess Diana was my bar.
Yeah.
I didn't, like, I feel like I already saw it. I feel like I saw everything because I saw the Princess Diana stuff.
Yeah.
No, it was black. Mm-hmm. They had a black pastor there.
We did. Oh, we watched the concert.
My God.
No,
he was
that
hilarious.
Was like the concert. We call that the concert. That wasn't the wedding. Oh. But yes, I saw all the singing and stuff. Yeah, that people, yeah. It was extra black.
The
black
so pastor.
Yeah. It was a pastor from America.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And he was changing.
He was rattling the spirits of all these white people.
We watched it on Twitter. Like, Twitter sort of live.
Yeah. We saw that. Yeah. So let's get into Messy Lit. What are you reading, people? What's going on? What are you guys reading?
I'm still reading A Woman in Your Own Right.
This is the book that you've been reading for the past 4 weeks.
First of all,
every week.
Part of,
everybody,
part
are you tired?
Of, no, we're not tired.
No,
okay, and I learned a new lesson that I think you guys should learn about. So,
okay, go for it.
Part of this book is just about.
Is it very long? Is that why you're reading
no,
it?
No, it's just. It's a nonfiction. I'm not really a nonfiction kind of gal. Okay. I kind of like to be lost in stories, but. I really want to get through it because my therapist recommended it to me. And, I think it's really powerful.
Sorry, can I just say something?
What?
It makes me laugh when you were tweeting about your therapist.
Anna?
Was it Anna's like, hey, Anna.
Thank you, Anna.
I'm like, you didn't like the last one? No.
No, the last one was so lovely.
I'm like,
I changed
Anna?
Her and I was talking about why it's important maybe to change your therapist if you've been through a big event, but then maybe they're still treating you in a way that brings you back to that. Mm. So I went to my first therapist and I was very like vulnerable, but now I'm a bit more stronger. I step into the room and she's like, how are you, Ray? And I'm like, bitch, I'm not sad no more. Like, let's talk about now stuff, you know?
But she was good. She got you through the vulnerable.
Yeah, she got me through. So I love her. So I, you know, I gave her a shout out.
I was like,
thank you so much, girl. You know, you taught me a lot.
Memes and
but
all.
Me and my Antonia now, we're strong.
Okay.
Antonia is so chatty. I come in and she's all smiley. But sometimes I want to cry and she's like, you're in this. I'm like, are you? Really? Can I cry?
You said I'm not sad no more, girl. That's good.
I'm good now. But,
so this book that you're reading.
This hilarious. Book, yeah. There is a part of it which I really think is important. And it's about, one, acknowledging your feelings, but it's called self-disclosure, which is about ways in which you can put your feelings into words and talk to them about, tell other people about it without guilt and without bribing them to feel a certain way so that they can then feel sorry for you. It's more so about disclosure of information so that you can better off. So essentially it's, this is how I feel.
Yeah.
And I just need you to acknowledge that, but not feel sorry for me. And I'm not trying to guilt you into anything. It's about ways in which you say that. So instead of me being like, Alex, you made me feel really annoyed. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm annoyed.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So there is that flip in, my emotions are my responsibility.
Yeah. So you
might have done something, but these emotions are all mine. I think that's quite cool.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading. And I think everyone should read it. Even if you're not a woman, you should still read the book.
Oh, is that shade? Wow.
Yeah.
What are you reading?
I'm reading The Source of Self-Regard by Toni Morrison.
Okay. Her latest, right?
The latest. Yeah. Just like, you know, she's just such a great writer. Mm. So like independent of the content, it's just like the sentences are beautiful. You're like, that was good. Didn't know people could do that.
Yeah.
So that's been good. I'm early in it because I travel so much and it is just such a big, like it's physically a big book. I'm like, I can't put this in my book bag right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, Toni.
We have a bit of a beef with Toni Morrison. Mainly because.
I don't know what this wheeze. I'm okay.
Okay. Is it? Yeah, it is Toni.
I'm joking. You're
Beautiful writing, but is this book? Do you have to get up to a certain point to get fully into it? Because I've always
essay.
Found
it's a collection.
Yeah.
So it's not.
Oh,
like
it's
not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I might go get
because
it.
Because I've always found when I've read Toni, whew, it's tough.
Yeah. Oh, it's work. Oh, it's definitely
it's work. She makes you work.
I read Paradise.
Yeah.
I was proud of my. At the end, I was like, I deserve something. Because this almost beat me to high heavens. Hard.
Wait, who's the main character in Paradise?
I don't even remember.
I'm trying to remember.
I remember when I read it being like, woo, I survived, baby. That was hard. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I've always found. So when I go into a Toni Morrison book, it's like this big thing. It's like, ooh. I'm going to go through it.
Yeah.
It's like watching an episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, does it?
Shonda just slaps you up.
Slaps you up.
Season 25.
That needs to end. It doesn't
no,
need to end soon.
Okay, fine.
It is. It's going to end soon.
Yeah, because they want to beat ER, I would imagine.
What?
They wanted to beat the because ER. Well, ER was a long running. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
ER was so great.
Was it? I never watched it.
I never watched it.
Did they have George Clooney in it?
Yeah.
Was that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, but when Mark, the head, was he the chief resident or head doctor? So he dies, like this is like the, and it, his death was like a thing. You were like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Yeah. Just like The West Wing. Did you watch The West Wing?
I watched part of The West Wing.
What do you mean part of it? You don't like The West Wing? Oh my God, it's a game changer.
I know, it's supposed to be, because I watch Shonda's videos and I mean, I absolutely love
it. I mean, I guess you also don't have like a present, so like that was probably foreign to you.
Yeah, but then I loved Scandal.
Love Scandal.
So up
Gary
until
Washington and that little lip quiver.
Ooh.
Like, girl, cry. Go ahead, cry, Gary.
And then wine glasses.
Wine glass and popcorn. Ooh.
Always.
Just making alcoholism.
That was like such a, you know, that was another show that Twitter helped make, you know. Twitter, like, it was like, it was a conversational line that like made it a thing.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like,
honestly.
Fitz's head looks like a pretzel.
It was good.
But yeah, what are you reading, Alex?
I'm going through a minimalist phase right about now. Again, I really want to just clear out my room, clear out my life.
Does that mean no books?
I'm listening to a book called The Minimalist Home by Joshua Rebecca.
Right.
And he basically wants to, you clear out all the stuff that don't have any value or meaning from each room by room.
Marie Kondo?
Kind of. But Marie Kondo, I don't know. Did you watch her series on Netflix?
I watched an episode.
How did you feel about that?
I liked it. I honestly only
talking to the book
because she was
giving the book permission
because it was like famous. I'm not a hoarder, but I could be.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I'm not ready for. I don't need that in my spirit right now.
Yeah. She was like, "Oh, you only should really have 30 books in your collection at any given time." I don't take that ministry. I lift that
have
in.
I like 121.
See, I got all of them. I know where they are. That's fine. The books are fine. The books are staying. It's more to do with like the clothes and all of the other papers and messes and everything.
Apparently, the way she like had you fold things was also cool.
Yeah.
It's like the folding technique was actually legit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, she's talking. Yeah, about the energy that goes into it and like discussing.
I'm not a hoarder. I don't know.
I don't think you are.
Cleaner. Yeah, because you know I'm a big cleaning.
Manic cleaner.
Like, I love to clean. So whenever I see something that's out of place, I'll just be like, do I need this?
Have you always loved to clean?
My aunt. She made me clean. It was torture.
I love laundry. I could literally do a load of laundry every single
Worst
day.
Worst thing ever.
I like laundry.
I love it.
I can finish all my clothes and just sit there and be like, oh. I have nothing to wear. Okay. Oh my God, laundry. It's a pointless task, don't you think?
No.
It's like, just like putting
clearing them bed sheets, washing the bed sheets, putting them back on, fresh bed sheets.
Oh, fresh bed sheets are nice, but it's just the process of just putting it all in and taking it out. And it's not even we're living in a hot country where, you know, you can go outside and just like
hang it up
and in the afternoon it's done.
You are in a hot country over here.
No.
Honestly,
is.
You have to put it on radiators or like those
or a tumble dryer.
Oh, you rich.
Yes. She said, radiators, you are air drying, you blowing on it at night. That's what you just gave us. You got your blow dryer out there.
It's so weird because I've moved out and I actually have a tumble dryer. But I just don't use it because I'm like, this is some luxury that I should not be using. And my friend's like,
it's a tumble dryer.
Oh, I was like, Ray, just use the damn dryer. And I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like I should. Your head.
Do you know how to use it?
Of course I know how to use it.
I just want you to know that you are worthy of a tumble dryer.
Exactly.
I don't know. Tell her, please. Even a dishwasher. I have a dishwasher, but I have never used it. I just look at it.
I looked at it the other day. I was like, you have a dishwasher here.
I have a dishwasher.
And your plate, the sink's full. Like, what is going on?
Shut up. It was not full.
It was full.
What's going on with your butt? You okay?
I don't know what's going on here. Look at this.
It's fine.
It's cute. It's a personality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you should have ironed it.
Okay. Okay, Ray, first of all.
Yes. Maybe you should have ironed it.
All right. So that's what I'm reading.
Fantastic.
Shady boots.
Yeah. She's so shady.
All right. So.
What's up?
Oh, do we have anyone that you want to shout out, Alex?
Ooh, this week.
I just want to give a shout out to Beyonce. I know I said that last week, but I just feel like that should be a thing.
Oh, we're coming off the back of like Game of Thrones, I guess.
I want to shout out Arya.
I want to shout out
Wait,
Arya.
Wait, you watched it?
I did. All right.
Yeah. Shout out Arya. But are we going to go? Are we going to go in?
I don't know.
No spoilers. I will just say, what's going to happen is that Arya is going to convince them. Convince or force, I don't know, because you know how Arya be sometimes. people that like, no throne. We don't need a throne. I think there's not.
The Democratic Republic of Westeros?
I think there are going to be 7 kings.
For each house?
I'll bring it back to how it was.
There's going
to
be like, there's not going to be one Iron Throne. There's going to be like a council of the kings who like, I think that Arya is going to be like, y'all, this is like, this fight for the Iron Throne is what's killing everybody. Yeah. And like, it's too much. That's my girl. I think Sansa is going to help her, but I think Arya is going to be the one that's like...
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think Sansa will be Lady Winterfell. Yep. Lady of Winterfell.
She's the only one that's the right...
She's also running shit.
Yeah, she's the only one that's got the right to it at the minute.
All of these people are fighting over the throne, and she's like, make sure you close the east gate so these heifers can come in.
And the food. She's right? Like, y'all, we ain't got no food. Also, Daenerys, the girl couldn't...
Did you see the way she looked? Did you see the meme? She was like,
this is the most ghetto shit I've ever seen.
It's like, I gotta hold something. What's this?
Girl, that dragon. When that dragon was gone, she was.
I was like, you're useless. What are you doing?
No, my issue is, I was talking about this morning, right? A lot of people think that to be powerful is to be violent, and maybe like violence is the thing that makes you powerful in that world. But I'm like, look at Tyrion, who I think is one of the smartest and the most ingenious of characters. Man was in the crypt. Just like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I loved what Daenerys said in the second episode when they were just strategizing. Poor strategy, by the way.
but they had no time.
She was like, you know what? I need your mind. You're here because of your mind.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to survive if, like, need your mind, essentially.
Almost didn't survive. She ended up reaching other people. Girl was almost out.
She landed Drogon on, you know.
Some next week.
He
had to deal with it himself, you know.
Right? Like, man was shaking off the dead people. Like
Drogon, you got you good? You got this? Okay.
But yeah, I really wanted Sam Mortali to die.
Oh, that's unfair.
Because I just feel like
he was useless. He's been useless though from the beginning. But
inconvenience. But
he did help the story push along though. Because like, love it. You know, what I mean?
Kill the friend because he's an inconvenience. Lord, we don't want you to be the ruler. Just stay inconvenient, killing people.
No, you saw when John ran past him and he was calling John's name, and John was like,
"I'm sorry." There was
John was like, "I didn't sacrifice enough."
I'm running to try and kill this anyway.
Yeah.
Last thing I'll say is that I appreciate that the Night King was a real mother jammer. The Night King was like, are we going to do this all the way to the end? Because sometimes the bad guy's like a little soft or like something random.
You're
like,
edge.
This guy was like, oh, we tearing it all apart. Did you see Avengers Endgame?
Of course.
I haven't seen it yet.
He was like the Thanos because Thanos too was like, are we going out?
Yeah.
Hard,
yeah.
And the Night King was like, you know what? I'm gonna kill as many people as humanly possible,
and then bring
like,
them back to life,
right? And then bring them so they can kill the rest of y'all.
Exactly.
Like, okay.
That was the part where I got so much dread because when John was walking to him, and he was like, "Oh, you think? Okay, let me raise up everybody. Mm-hmm. We have little Lyanna moment there. Just come back right out."
Oh, she was a soldier. She needed a shout out to her as well.
Yeah, she was.
She came to fight the giant. I'm like, nah, you and your little self.
She was cute.
I like her.
Or whatever.
We're going to go out like this.
Together. Oh, but yeah, shout out to Arya Stark. Thank you so much for saving the Seven Kingdoms.
Saving Westeros.
What do you say to the God of Death?
Not today.
Not today.
Not today.
Not today.
Oh, my goodness. Let's get stuck into
your book,
DeRay.
Okay, so tell us a bit about
The Other Side of Freedom.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I wanted to write a book that was about not only the experiences of the past 5 years and the protests and this work around justice, but also a set of ideas and lessons that I've learned since then that I wanted to pass on to other people. So some of it's about the protests, some of it's about me. I write about being gay. I write about my mother leaving and coming back.
Yeah.
And a host of other things that I wanted to share with people finally.
How has the climate of American, I want to say black politics, but general politics, do you think has shifted in the past 5 years? Because over here, what I got was that there was a time of hope, even though, like, I remember being up watching Obama.
Yeah.
I was going to say being knighted.
inaugurated.
Exactly. And
yes, we can.
We felt that on this side, right? And then, in a very sinister way, the politics started changing even whilst he was in office. I felt almost from this center left agenda to this far right agenda that capitalized on people's fears. And we got it on our side with, like, I'm not political Brexit, but the reasons why a lot of people were voting for Brexit because of dumb shit like immigration, for instance. And it was almost that collaboration of the different sides of the Atlantic whereby the imaginations of the people are really changing. How was that like in America being on the ground as a black man, essentially?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we see time and time again is that people confuse a change in conversation with a change in outcomes. Mm-hmm. And when Obama got elected, it was a change in conversation about blackness. Mm-hmm. It was like the hope train was going full steam. Yeah. It was like this idea of representation that like we legitimately did start talking about the world in a different way. And like some of the outcomes changed. You know, like healthcare, we would not have healthcare if not for Obama, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was like a huge change mm-hmm. that they got in the first 2 years of the administration. That was a big deal. But in so many ways, the outcomes like didn't change in the way people thought they were going to change. It just didn't happen, certainly yeah. with regard to the police and criminal justice.
Yeah.
And they did some good programmatic things. Most of those things Trump has like taken back, which is not very helpful.
Yeah.
I think if anything, what we've seen over the past, since the protests, is certainly more people being active and more people being like, this is just not what we want. Like, this doesn't work. And like, we want to fight and do something different. And also like more people realizing that they also have to be a part of the system, that the work has to be being as organized on the inside as the outside. It can't just be on the outside, right? So
yeah.
you see like this new Congress, like all these young people in Congress now is huge, right? But it was a recognition. There's all these people who like thought that you hear Lauren Underwood, a young black woman in Congress.
Yeah.
When you hear her talk about why she ran, she was like, well, I went to go talk to my congressperson.
Mm.
He wouldn't reply. Mm. Like, he wouldn't get back to me. And I realized, like, that's not okay.
Yeah.
And then it's like all these people who, like, they tried to work within the thing as it was designed. And it was like, this don't work, right?
Yeah.
And they were like, I'm going to do it. You're like, go do that. So so that has really been promising. But it is this question of, like, how do we stay focused on the outcomes? The prison population is decreasing, it looks like. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The police kill as many people, if not more, than they did in 2014. Not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Public education is still a nightmare, right? So how do we not let people get seduced by, like, the new rhetoric and actually focus on the outcomes?
Yeah.
Okay. What was the writing journey like? What was the process to try and getting the stories down? And then obviously the publishing process, because we talk a lot about, you know, getting like black people writing, black people publishing, especially in the UK. But from your perspective, what was that whole journey like? Like getting all your thoughts, getting your experiences down, and then going through the publishing process?
Yeah, writing the book was hard because I like had never written a book before. So if I would give people advice, you know, I didn't know that most editors look at the whole book at once. Like, they don't look at pieces, you know? So I'm like, you know, as somebody who went to college, I'm like, well, I just send in the essay, you give me feedback. And they're like, that's not how it works. So I'm like, oh, I'm not used to that.
Okay.
So that was really hard. The tour was really grueling. You know, I probably did like 24, 25 cities in 30 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just like a lot.
Yeah.
So that was special. And, you know, one of the hardest things about the book was all the stories I couldn't tell, right? That, like, we were in the street for 400 days. It was a long 400 days. I've been to almost all the cities in protest. So there are a lot of stories that just, like, didn't make the book.
Mm.
And it, in some ways, it'll always feel incomplete in the sense that, like, I just couldn't write every single thing that happened, you know? So, like, I remember being in McKinney, Texas, where the young woman got beat up at the pool, or, like, the protest when Sandra Bland got killed. Like, I was in so many places, you know? Like, not all of those stories made sense to write down, or there wasn't, like, a larger story to tell. It just was, like, an experience that I'll never forget that was important. So always trying to be true to that. The third thing is that I wanted the book also to give recognition to some of the other people who were in the street and played an important role, and I tried to do that as well.
How do you, like... Because I understand that you've been involved in just social activism for a while. For the time that... I mean, there are times I can do it physically. Most of the time, I'm just ranting on Twitter. But sometimes it gets really tiring, and it just really affects like your mental health to the point where you want to make a difference, but it's two steps forward, one step back. You're never really moving at a pace that you wish you could. If you have had that moment, how have you kind of gotten over it, and what advice would you give other sort of people who are really interested in doing that social work and changing their communities and changing the politics in their where they live, but then also have that, oh, for fuck's sake, this is just not going as quickly as I want it to. Mm. I'm a bit tired. It's just giving me so much anxiety. How have you ever counteracted that?
Yeah, I think I'm mindful that almost all organizing that you've ever heard of starts off small. You know, it starts out in, like, living rooms and dining rooms and in porches and in classrooms. Like, that's where it starts. And I think people... they will hear me on this podcast, or they see me with a million followers on Twitter, and they're like, this is how, and you're like, it started, I made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in somebody's living room in St. Louis. I was like the first thing I did. You know, like, that's like how it starts.
Yeah.
So I'm reminded of that. I'm also reminded too that, like, more sometimes is just more, not better, right? Mm. People think that you need a million people to do this or like 200 that. And like, you know, the stuff that we did with like 5 or 6 people was stuff that changed the game, you know? Like you actually just, you need a core group of people who like believe. And because most people don't want to be the first person to join. They want to be like the third or fourth file. You know, they want to be like the, after somebody's worked out the kink, then they want to join. But getting those people who will like build the thing at the beginning is actually really special. And you don't need a million people to do that. You actually just need like a tight group. So that keeps me hopeful. The third is that I really do think we can win. Like I do. Yeah. And because I think we can win, it keeps me like, it keeps me in the game when I'm like, what are we doing? I'm like,
You're the Captain America of everyone.
Yeah. I'm like, this is like,
I'm like the Tony Stark. I'm like, damn.
But Tony came back for the fight. Without Tony, we wouldn't have had it.
Yeah.
So like, I the skepticism is healthy, right? The doubt is like an important part of the hero's journey, as we know. But I really do. I think that we can look back. We're going to look back when we're like 15, 16 and be like, wow, that was really hard. And we almost died and we died. You know? And I think about it, especially at home, it's like, you think about what the Republicans are doing now. The Republicans literally did the single biggest change to the tax code in like a couple weeks, wrote it on scrap paper, people didn't read it, and they did it, you know? Single biggest rewrite in the history of the tax code in like days. So don't tell me we got to wait 10 generations to finish anything, you know? Like, you actually are, you've done a, you have provided a model for it. If anything, we're like a little too cautious. And I do think that one of the things that we do to our disadvantage is that sometimes we fight for what we think we can get, not what we think we deserve, you know? And we got to start fighting for what we think we deserve.
Fantastic. I wanted to just ask about, like, the importance of protest. So, you know, all of this stuff that we're doing, you know, getting, sitting down, starting all these conversations, having the organization to basically try to then move into the street to then protest. How important is protest to you? What does that look like? And why should everybody do it? Why should we do it? Because not everybody wants to get out there on the front line and start and, you know, wave the picket, and everybody wants to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if everybody has to do it in that way. I think that protest at its root is this idea.
I feel like a lot of people, they like, you know, if you're not out there protesting, because I've got a few people who literally have the placards, have the, like, have the, wave the banners and stuff. I have a few people that like to do that. And when you're not out there complaining or shouting from the rooftops, it's kind of looked at as, why aren't you out there, sort of thing.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't know if that's like a healthy way to be in this space. I think that like protest at its root is this idea of telling the truth in public. That what we were doing with our bodies was telling the truth. We were like, he should be alive today. He, Mike Brown should be standing alongside all of us in the middle of the street. And I'm also mindful that by the time people have taken to the street, it's because they tried everything else, right? We tried the email, didn't work, you didn't listen. We called.
We tried the email.
We wrote the petition, we wrote our signatures down.
We wrote the petition, we shut it down. All of a sudden, everybody's like, what's going on? It's like, we try all the other things, right? So if you don't like the protest, then fix it on the front end so we won't have to be out there, you know?
It's similar to what's happened with Extinction Rebellion. Basically, there was this environmental protest that happened in the past 2 weeks in April. And they literally went to Oxford Circus and shut it down. They went to, they've camped in
various
Piccadilly Circus, shut it down.
Where I work as well.
They're trying to head to, they're trying to head to Heathrow to shut it down. But all they wanted was to speak to the environmental secretary, and he just hasn't responded. He didn't respond. So it's just like, well, everybody's ringing up on the radio. They're like, oh, I've lost work today and all this stuff. And they're like, well, it's greater than your work, because if the earth dies, you're not going to be able to have a job.
So weird you say that, because I remember having to go to a recording. I don't know if it was a recording or something.
We're meeting.
And we're meeting up, and then there were
It was St. Patrick's Day.
And
was
in
it
the
you?
Moment, I was angry. I was
like, what are they doing? I got somewhere to go.
Right. I was like, I have somewhere to go. Look at these idiots. Da, 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 da. And then I just sat down. I was like, Rafa, shut up. Like, you know it's good.
Yeah.
You know, essentially, at the end of it, David Attenborough?
Yeah, David Attenborough.
Literally, like, he'd been telling us that we have, like, 12 years left.
He's eight, man. He's okay. He's so far at the end of his life.
Boy. And what they need is for you to be so annoyed that you call the environmental secretary, like, meet with those people. Meet with them so they get out the street.
They're ruining my day.
Exactly. That's what they need. You call them and be like, I don't even know these people, but please meet with them, you know? And that's real. Is that like, you know, you think about if, like, we would have never been in the street if they didn't kill Mike Brown. Like, don't kill people and we won't have to be out here. You know what I mean? If you did it right in the first place, I'd be home. So
I remember, currently, I don't know if it's being covered as much in terms of just black men being killed, but there was a space, I think, a good 18 months from like mid-2017 to like 2018, when that was all I was seeing on the TL.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
And
death.
To the point where I would say something every day, and then my heart just got like hardened. I was like, oh my God. And I just can't imagine.
Mm.
Like, we're like on this side. I mean, obviously it happens to us.
There's things that happen here. Yeah.
It happens here, doesn't get as much coverage, which is a massive issue. Mm. But at the same time, I'm just like, whoo! Yeah.
The thing is,
dealing with that.
Did you know much about the Mark Duggan shooting?
Yeah. Heard about it.
Yeah, so when that happened in 2011, I think that's the first time that I'd seen everybody, in our generation anyway, yeah, take to the streets like that. Like, it was riots happened, like national riots happened, and a whole generation of oppressed people started speaking up and started shouting, and it happened. But the thing about the UK is that it tends to depress quite quickly. So like, you've got, they put it under the rug. So every so often we have the Extinction Rebellions and it's like, yeah, we're all here standing in the thing, then it's done. We had the Black Lives Matter protests and they were lying. Is it Gatwick or Heathrow? But they were basically protesting the exact same thing here, and we did it in Brixton as well. And then it just goes silent for a while. Like, there's no continuous thing. And I feel like in the States, it's just like there's a continuous dialogue consistently. And I don't know
probably how because the trauma is consistent. You know, it's like the police, a third of all the people killed by a stranger in the United States is killed by a police officer. So it happens like all the time, you know, and it happens frequently enough that people are like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who really did think that there was a problem in Ferguson. They like did not think there was a problem in the country. They were like, oh, this is isolated to the Midwest. And it's like, nope, they killed that boy outside of your house. They killed that guy. Like, it happened so much that people are like, wow, this is like really crazy, you know?
What is like the aim and purpose of, I guess, you putting your life's work so far and what you've been up to in the past 5 years in this book? And what do you think you'd want somebody coming out of it thinking or feeling?
Yeah, there are a lot of things, you know, I think about all the things I wish I had read when we were in the street.
Mm.
And I think about, you know, in America, most of the organizing texts, like texts around organizing, which isn't necessarily what this is, but I wanted to put some lessons in the book that would have helped organizers. Like, most.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Most of those things are written by the white people who are around the black organizers, like not actually written by the black organizers. So you get the King's work is like very theoretical, right? It's like a sort of about the philosophy of the work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You get the Rustins, like the Cleavers, like those sort of people. Is that I think about like, what are the essays I wish I'd read? You know, I wish I'd read like an activist write about being gay, you know? Mm-hmm. I wish I'd read somebody be honest about like how their family issues like play out in the work they do. Like, I wish I just read those things. So I wanted to do that in the book.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to have something that like, I wanted to put, I feel like I'm in so many rooms. There's so many ideas. There's so many things that, like, I was starting to worry that I would not remember them, or like I would, there'd just be, I'd like lose them, you know? So I wanted to put them somewhere so they existed so that I could share them with other people.
Yeah. And how has it been? I mean, I guess you're in the public eye. How does that affect your activism?
Interesting question. Some people, I meet them and they think I'm smart on the internet. So they like, they're like, oh my God, he's smart. And you're like, that was rude. there's some people who, for whom I can never be, like, I just will never be whatever they think radical is. Like, it'll just never be enough, right? Because it's like, I don't look like what they think a protester looks like, or I don't sound like what they think a protester, or like the best, or like whatever. So like that sort of becomes a thing. And the third part, which is like the most hopeful part, is that there are so many people who I meet who are like ready to do work. They're like, let me know. You know, they're like, let me know what I can do. Like, let me figure it out. And the visibility like helps do that. It also helps me tell the truth in the most public platforms, right? So I can be on these things and talk about the police and like sort of push and push, or talk about mass incarceration and push. Or I can like help amplify other people's voices. So like you might have 1,000 followers, but you said something that was brilliant. I'm like, that was dope. So I can like put that in the timeline in a way that'll just make it travel in a way that you probably couldn't do alone.
Yeah.
Mm. And like that is cool to be able to like help those things move, you know?
Yeah. What is it like being challenged about the identity of the activist and what that looks like? People will be like, oh, you can't be an activist and be an influencer. And you can't be an activist and be an influencer. You can't be on the forefront of a movement and still want to sell or still want to be able to influence particular products or, you know, liaising particular people. Yeah. And obviously people are always saying things like, you know, there's in the comparison to activists or people that were in the front of like large black movements back in the 60s or 70s in comparison to now, obviously we've got social media, it's different, but have you ever had like a lot of kind of not attacks but challenges about your activism and about the stuff that you do?
Ton of challenges, ton of attacks, ton of critiques. I think that with that sort of stuff, it's interesting. I think that one of the hardest things is that you become a canvas for everybody's frustration. So it's like, I'm friends with Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter. I'm not, I can't like explain. I don't work at Twitter, you know, like, I don't know why you know, like, I don't.
Yeah.
So like, I saw somebody sent me this thing the other day that like somebody being, I think they thought this was sort of some interesting dig. They put a picture of Jack and then a picture of me. We both have one that's a Twitter shirt that the black employees at Twitter made up, and we both are wearing it like in different moments.
I think I saw
like
it.
The thing was like relationship goals or something, and you're like, I'm not responsible for Jack Dorsey. Do you know what I mean? He's like a whole adult.
Yeah.
And like, for you insinuating that we have like some sexual relationship is annoying, right?
Yeah.
And like, I don't even know how, like, why am I responsible for Jack? You don't know what I've said to Jack offline. Yeah. Like, just because I'm not fighting Jack on Twitter doesn't mean that, like, we agree about everything.
Yeah.
But, like, I do know him. You know, so like, that becomes this sort of weird thing where people are like, I'm going to tell you. Like,
I currently have that right now.
With what?
A friend of mine is moving mad. And I'm just like, outside of it, I'm like, can you just stop chatting shit online?
Yeah.
And then other people come and say, he's like, oh, fine. I'm like,
I hate it when that happens.
I'm cussing him out, but I'm not going to go online and be like, you piece of shit.
Tell your friend. Like, you know,
I'm not their key. They are a grown adult.
Or people DM you screenshots or DM you the tweet.
Oh, my God. It's just like, yo, you think I agree? Because
you can have disagreements with your friends. Like, it's not a thing.
Yeah. And, like, I also don't take money to tweet.
Money to tweet. Okay.
Yeah.
So people will, and, like, normally, like, places will reach out being like, Dre, will you, like, support this product? And it's like, well, if I like it, I'll tweet about it anyway, right? I don't need to get paid to tweet about it.
Yeah.
I think that that's, like, a cool t-shirt, then I'll tell people, to go, like, I don't need to get money. So that, but people, like, I tweeted about the first thing that ever went viral in a bad way is that I said something about Dove soap, because, like, we grew up using Dove, because I don't know what we use. And somebody was like, you can't believe in black people because you use white soap. And it was like a thing. And I was like, I hate you people. And then, so like, my best friend is this guy named Donnie who lives in Chicago. And one day we were having this random conversation. He was like, it was so random, but he was like, I really think that Taco Bell's like visuals are great. He was like, I don't know. He was like, I don't really love their food, but like, I go to Taco Bell and he's like, it just looks like whoever put this together like did it. So I tweeted like my friend said like the taco of it, and people literally were like, he got paid. Like they thought that it was like that was like a sponsored
tweet. Ad, yeah.
You're like, no, he really was just talking about Taco Bell. You know, like, yeah. Or like Verizon. I have so I have three phones because one of my phones got hacked. So I always travel with more than one phone, and the hacking was a whole thing and blah blah.
That's insane. So why is anyone hacking you?
I know, it was like it was really frustrating. But I travel with more than my phone, so but I use Verizon now has like these unlimited plans, but they used to not.
Yeah.
So my phone bill would be like a crazy, you know, because I have three lines. Yeah. It was like really crazy. So I like woke up and Verizon had rolled out like unlimited, like a flat. I like knew what the bill was going to be every month.
Yeah.
So I tweeted like, I'm so pumped for these unlimited lines. And people literally, people called Verizon's PR team.
What?
To like uncover Duray the like that I was lying. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh, that's great. Or Spotify. You know, Spotify has Discover Weekly. Have you ever used Discover Weekly? Love Discover Weekly.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to it every Monday. And every single Monday I would tweet like, love Discover Weekly. Yeah. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Like, and it got so bad that so many people called the press team at Spotify that I know the press people there. Because like one day I got a call being like, hey, Duray, just want to give you a heads up. And it's like, no, I don't. Like, I really just like Spotify. And like, it is this weird thing where I think people in the public space sort of feel like they can't be like, I can believe in the end of capitalism and acknowledge that I'm a consumer, right? Like, I don't know how, like, we are all consumers, right?
So, like, unless you want to live by yourself in the forest, and even then, you'll probably need to pay rent for that plot
like
of land.
Or, like, the tools that you had, you probably didn't make, right?
Right.
Like, so I'm honest about the fact that, like, sometimes I just want chicken nuggets. Like, that is real, which does not mean that I, like, believe that McDonald's is a great corporation, but it does mean I'm hungry, you know? Like, and like, people get in this weird space where they're just not honest, right? Mm-hmm. So they want you to be this, like, they're like, did you? It's like, no, I ate at Chipotle today because it was the only thing in the place I was in. You know, like, that's real. And I could pretend that I, like, am eating farm-raised chickens. Yeah, I'm not. And neither are you.
Well, lucky I had to get free-range eggs. They're a bit more expensive, but I thought I was allergic. So I have an intolerance, but I didn't know this because I'm so
you
stupid.
You are ridiculous.
And I was like, you know what? It's the eggs. It's because they're enslaving these damn chickens.
Yes.
And they taste bad. Oh. And therefore, my body cannot tolerate enslaved eggs. And my friend was like, first of all, you're stupid. I was like, so let me go to Waitrose and get free range eggs. The chickens have freedom. And they have like a life. Maybe they're happier. Maybe they can lay better eggs. And I ate them. And I'm still a bit intolerant, so yeah, apparently my body just doesn't like eggs.
Yes,
and
free-range
not just,
eggs.
Not just enslaved eggs.
So my body will not consume enslaved meat.
Yes.
One last thing.
Okay.
What's been the most defining moment of your career?
Of my career?
Career so far.
Like in education.
However you want to answer the question.
Defining moment in
I think
life.
That the,
so far, I mean,
the protests were really big in the sense that one of the things that was so beautiful about the beginning is that we really didn't know the world was watching. Like, we just had no clue. So people talk about my followers and stuff like that. But it's like, I had the same influence in the street from like 5,000 to 500,000. It just didn't, in St. Louis, it just didn't matter, right? So it wasn't until I left that I realized that the world was watching all of us. But the tunnel vision was actually really beautiful. Like, the sense of community, it doesn't exist anymore. But the sense of community we had in protest was, like, magical. Especially, I wouldn't believe it if I didn't see it. Like, there was no, like, nightly meeting or, like, hierarchy. But we, like, figured out how to all be in the space together. And it was actually really, really beautiful. And I think that being a part of that and seeing that just, like, changed a lot for me.
Yeah.
Because I now, like, know it's possible. You know, I know that, like, we can start movements without one, two, or three single leaders, without institutions like churches and school. Like, the people actually are enough.
Yeah.
And I think I would not, the history didn't tell me that. History told me that everything came out of structures, right? Mm-hmm. And then I saw people stay in the street and just stay in the street. And, like, you know, in the beginning, it was like people would self-organize. Like, the police would be awful and, like, they would not stop track. Like, the protesters would block off the streets and the police would let cars still come through. And the protesters, like, organized these, like, traffic stop things. It was just, like, incredible to see people self-organize, like, without having gone to organizer training, without, like, this being their job, without, like, people actually had the skills to do it. And, like, seeing that was just, like, it changed everything.
What do we have in store for you in the future? What can we expect?
No, I'm just trying to, we're trying to win. Hopefully, I want to do something that's a little more, it's a little less essay-ish and a little more, like, take it and use it, you know?
Okay. Ooh, like a manual.
Yeah, something that you can, like that you don't necessarily need to be a reader to, like, take, go, move, use, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think about, honestly, when we were in the street, it's like, I just didn't have time to read anything long. It's like, if it wasn't an article, I was, because we were like so swamped, you know, so a book would have killed me. But like something tight, like that you, like I want to do something a little less essayish.
Would you ever see yourself like within political structures, within parties? Because I know that you previously
ran for mayor.
Is that something that?
Yeah, I think that we, I do think we have to be as organized on the inside as the outside, right? Yeah. That we can't just be fighting the people in positions of power. We have to be those people sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I believe that, yeah. So I would do that. I was most recently the chief human capital in the school system in Baltimore, and that was, it was important to have somebody in that role who just like already believed, right? Like you didn't have to fight me about justice or equity, because like I had the power and I could do it. So those things are important. So yeah, I definitely work on the inside. Mm-hmm. I believe that I can have a, I have a different reach now on the outside, right? I can like push in all these different places and not just confined to one place. But yeah.
Okay.
Oh, thank you so much. Cool. Guys, make sure you get on the other side of freedom.
On the other side of freedom.
So, mostly flicks.
What are we going to talk about? What are we going to do? Homecoming.
We're going to talk about Homecoming. We're going to talk about Homecoming. But first of all, I wanted to, first of all, like, what are you guys watching at the minute? Yeah. But, yeah, what are you watching at the moment? Is there anything that you're watching? Do you have time?
Series.
Do you have time to watch stuff?
On planes.
On planes.
I'm about to watch Brené Brown's Netflix special.
I am too.
I had her on the podcast twice and she was incredible.
She's amazing. I love her.
What are you going to watch, Alex? Or what are you watching?
That, I'm going to watch that. Because she triggered me.
You preemptively cry. I love it.
she triggers me all the time. What am I watching at the moment? I'm watching this thing. There's an actress called Mariam Margulies. Like she was...
The Good Wife. Wasn't she on The Good Wife?
No, not her.
Oh, no, that's Julia.
That's Julia Margulies.
Yes. Okay,
yeah. I don't know, Mariam. No, you watch Harry Potter, right?
Yes.
You know Professor Sprout.
No, I remember her.
You don't remember her?
I know the character. I don't know what she looks like.
Yeah,
she's the small woman.
The small woman with the mandrake thing. Yeah. And she's like...
Curly hair in the film. No. Okay.
Head of Hufflepuff. Okay.
She had Hufflepuff.
Yeah, head of Hufflepuff. Anyway, so she's basically got this... I was watching this thing on BBC yesterday. It was about, you know, she's 77. She's trying to figure out death. And like, I talk to people about, you know, trying to relinquish your fears of death and different things. She goes to America and people are trying to say that death is a... is avoidable. You can, they're trying to, there's this 80-year-old
American way of,
yeah, like, you know, there's this woman like
escapism.
Yeah, she was like, there's this American woman and she's basically doing this whole talk. She's in her 80s and she looks really good for her age, but she's just like, you know, like, who wants death? No one wants death. Like you shouldn't have to have it. Like, death is not a nice thing and all these different things.
How do you know?
And she, I don't know. Like she's out here in the gym, like, looking good and stuff. So that's what I'm watching. I'm watching Dead Good. It's called A Dead Good Journey or something like that. And how she battles with death.
On
I don't
Netflix?
Know. BBC. It's on the BBC iPlayer. But it might be. Yeah.
I haven't been watching anything.
No?
No, just rewatching Homecoming.
Okay.
Re-listening
to Homecoming.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
It's long, though.
That's because this heifer, yeah.
Is talking and giving people information.
All she did was like, all right, so I'm going to do a voiceover for like 20 minutes. I'm going to give you original content for like 23 minutes. And then I'll just put the whole show down. Like, we didn't.
Because I'm the baddest.
Honestly, like, we didn't, you know, torrent that somewhere.
Yep.
Get it the first day, download it on our laptops. And we've been watching it for a whole year. Just to give us the HD version.
Yeah.
I appreciate that's
the editing, though.
It was
fantastic. Woo! Amazing.
It was literally woo! Out of this world. You're like, that
yellow,
was
pink.
Good.
The
yellow,
first
pink.
Time when they did that flip, the flip that I saw was, you know, the.
The costume when she walks on.
No, not even that part, but drop it and the girls turn around and the S is after it. And I was like, whoa!
Yeah.
That was pretty special.
Literally, for 2 seconds, I was like, wow, they have two-toned suits on.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, the front is one color and the back is one. And then I was like, nope, it's the editing.
Because they didn't film the second day, did they?
No.
Yeah.
Like, no, they did.
I mean, like, so people could watch it.
Like, stream it.
So people could, sorry, they didn't stream it, sorry.
How was it, like, being there? You said you were there.
Yeah.
It's good. Have you ever been to Coachella?
No.
It's really, the question is, like, who would you be willing to stand in the dirt for? Because that's what Coachella is, the desert. It's literally this big dirt thing.
Yeah.
And so for her, everybody was there, even second weekend, like, tons of people. And I had, like, an artist guest thing, whatever. But still, like, I'm standing, all of us had to stand for an hour. To just be close to the stage. I mean, like, I was close to the stage, but, like, we stood and waited for an hour. Like, everybody's just standing there so you can get a good spot. And then she comes and performs. You're like, this is really the best thing. Like, you're a human, you know?
Entertain.
And she, like, what is incredible, the stage at Coachella is very long. It's, like, a huge stage.
Mm.
Matt.
It looked vast. Yeah,
it's huge. And she actually performs the entire length of the stage, and you don't appreciate that until you see somebody not do that. So I went back this year.
Yeah.
And most of the people just perform in the middle. They like, and which is like sort of interesting, but you're watching everything from a screen. It's like, well, I can watch the screen back there.
Dude. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So seeing it was really special. It's like, you are just the baddest, you know?
You can imagine.
The one thing, the babies.
Yeah, like everything was great about it. But
she
the
finally
thing,
shows
my,
them babies.
My main thing is like, so two things. First of all, can you explain what homecoming is? Because obviously we don't necessarily have that here. We don't. In homecoming, like they have the homecoming. We see it in a lot of like American teen films and a lot of things.
You don't have that.
We don't have homecoming.
We don't have that. So, we know about it from movies.
So we know it. So we know about homecoming in the sense of like going back home. Because I know that Ghana and Nigeria, they've got this big thing about the big home going and homecoming,
that's
home
not
going.
Hard, I thought homecoming was like.
But that's what I'm saying.
Schools
in that,
and they have.
No. In that context. In that context, but in the American context.
Y'all didn't see the dances, y'all. Y'all didn't see it right with the dances. But it's like a...
Alpha, beta, data.
I don't know what delta, whatever those people are. You know, stop the yard kind of...
Broke fire, stuff. Broke. Broke fire, broke.
Lord, everybody, help her out. Yeah, so it's like, it's normally around like a football game in the fall.
Okay.
And it's like the big, it's like the sort of big beginning of the seat. Like, it's not, because it's not, it's actually rarely the first game in places, but it's like maybe the first real game. They're like some warm games, the first real game. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a big deal. So like every, like all the bands come out and like the pom-poms and like the, so in high school you have homecoming and or like a pep rally homecoming is like when there's like the prom king and prom queen is homecoming.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of like the same thing in college just every single year. So some places like crown people at homecoming. It's like a whole
homecoming dance.
Yeah, my cousin was king. I wanted to homecoming. I don't know. You got some ribbon.
At the black schools, HBCUs.
Yeah, that's where
homecoming is like they just have like the marching bands and stuff, and you're like, because black people are just so great. And I was at Beyonce's the Adidas party that she just had, and she just posted this online. So we're at the party. It's like probably like 150 people. It's like a small. It's like not a ton of people. The space is big.
Yeah.
But she's there, so it feels like it's, you know, must be full. And all of a sudden, you look up and you're like, who are these people outside? And you're like, that is the entire Grambling State University marching band. Like, they're all there. And like a whole marching band comes in and performs like at the party. It was like the most, you're like, fantastic. Only you could get an entire marching band to like fly across the country. And Coachella is like not in LA. It's like 2.5 hours, 3 hours like north of LA.
Yeah,
like an insecure winter. When you, like, how do you sleep there? Is it like you?
People
have...
do. I stay in a hotel like close.
Okay. That's what I
but
do.
Some people like do, like, you can stay on the grounds. But yeah, it was like incredible to see this like marching band come and just like perform their little hearts out for
Beyonce.
You're like, okay.
Yeah.
That is so nice.
It really is. I'm happy that she did those documentary parts too to like show people like her, you know, outside of like the stage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was quite nice for a lot of women to see.
Yeah, in general as well.
And my favorite was when she was like, why would I give new notes? I see my notes. Like,
it was so funny.
And at the end,
she was like,
Jay-Z was away now. Like, well, you heard her. And she's like, yeah, I'm off to celebrate my anniversary. Everyone's just like, happy anniversary. I'm like, it's my anniversary. I'm like, you just read these people to filth.
It was so funny.
And now you're like,
so funny. She looked, it's that little cough she made, had a drink. She's like, that's where I am now. And everyone was like, well, if she's tired. When she was saying, you know, everybody's tired, like, you know, but we're just going to have to keep working because, you know, but I appreciate that you're all tired. Then she had the little cough. This, if it's like, well, that's where I am now. So everyone's like, well, okay. So
like
if she's tired, then we all can't. Then we all have to. You know what I mean? Like
she was reading the artist, and she was like, you know, people just don't want to rehearse. Mm. They don't want to be vulnerable and look silly. And I'm like, that's right.
Because it humbles you. She was like, people don't want to go to rehearsal because it humbles you. You're like, go ahead and preach to these people, girl.
Tell them.
Come on.
And then she was at the part where she was showing Jay her.
He was like real basic. He was like, yeah.
He was like, all right. I was like,
like bye.
And the guy just knocked the phone off. Like, yeah, you don't deserve more time with Beyonce right now. So guys, make sure you watch Homecoming.
But like, I wanted to ask a bit about HBCUs as well.
Dude,
yeah. I was like, I always wondered what it would be like to have like a black university in the UK.
Oh
Oh my god.
Yeah, because you guys don't have
We just don't have that.
We have what we call ACS, which is the African and Caribbean Society. And essentially,
in every university.
However,
they're all different.
They're very different. Some are active, some are not. Some are made up of five people, some are made up of more. I had an ACS. I quite really liked my ACS, actually. I applied for VP. I didn't get it because this guy that got it basically just took off his shirt. Oh, no, sorry. Started asking people. Oh, and if you need to.
She's not bitter, everybody. She's not bitter.
Yeah. She's over it, clearly.
I'm very over it. You know, I'm doing much better than him. Thank you very much. but yeah, and you apply, and then sometimes you get into the sort of organization. They have little club nights, or they have debate nights, or we had a big cultural show at the end called Charisma, which is really nice. But it's not going to a black. Can you imagine?
Yeah, imagine a black.
I didn't go to HBCU. Yeah. My sister did, and I'll never forget visiting her and being like, "Girl, this is everything. Like, yeah, this is like a whole different experience."
Yeah.
But is it? Are they not ranked the same as
the PWI?
Yeah, they're not resourced the same. Mm. So they're like a couple ones that are probably the most famous, so like Howard, Spelman, Morehouse.
Yeah,
like
Spelman,
are the big ones that like probably the most nationally known and highest ranked.
I see.
Some of the schools have more known programs, like, you know, some schools graduate like more PhDs in this, so like more black PhDs in this, but they just are across the board under-resourced. You know, so like the college I went to, we have classes of 450 people. Like I went to Bowdoin in Maine, and we have $1 billion endowment, right? And like 450 people in a class, $1 billion is insane. That's just like a ton of money for a school that has 1,700 kids a year, right? Is that there's no HBCU that has $1 billion, like that even approaches that much money in the endowment, right? And part of it is like what happens when you historically disadvantage a set of people so they can't accrue wealth, and then all of a sudden like you're like, why aren't they giving? It's like they actually just don't. How do you give a... How many donors do you need to give $1 billion when like everybody doesn't have intergenerational wealth, right?
Yeah.
I would like to go. But to
I want to see like how does it affect like you must think how it would affect your self-esteem, how it would affect the way that you like you're in competition with each other just based off the fact that you are just in school rather than you're in competition with somebody that is definitely going to have a leg up.
But then I also think about how does it feel like then to move from a HBCU into the real world,
that's another thing.
Which you're literally going to be then that, oh shit, I'm a minority here. Because that's how I felt when I went from secondary school, college to university.
Mm.
For me,
it's like
I went to a sixth form and a school that white people were the minority, essentially.
Yeah.
I think it was like six of them. But when I went to university studying English literature, I was a sore thumb.
Yeah.
You know?
I was like one of four people that studied languages where I was. Yeah.
And so I'm just like, in a way, I'm like, it's annoying. Can't lie. And you just don't feel like you can just come out of your shell.
Mm.
And I think maybe providing that space, if a HBCU provides that space, I think it'll be glorious. But then I'm like, how then do you deal with the outside world after that?
Yeah. I think people deal with it well. Is that if anything, I've seen the exact opposite. Is that they actually, so many of my friends who went to HBCUs is that network has stayed with them throughout life.
Yeah.
You know? So as they navigate this larger world and dominant culture, they actually have a place that is always feeling like home.
Mm.
Whereas like those of us who, you know, I went to historically, I'm a predominantly white institution, PWI. And so I'm really close to like the black people that were there when I was there.
Yeah.
But like I'm navigating a whole, it's just like a different way to be in the world, you know? Whereas I see these, I know some guys, a lot of guys that went to Morehouse and like they still, like they just, it's like a tight sort of group that is like culturally really close and close because of this connection. You know?
Yeah. I think it's similar, like it's like grad schemes here, isn't it? Sometimes you go to, you enter into a like, profession, you've been around a lot of black people or something in your ACS or whatever, and then you go
together,
and you're like, you know what I mean?
So I'm a trainee solicitor and I studied at my university with like three other black girls, and we now work in the same place. We trained to go and go into the same place. It's so nice when these people are just pissing you off that you can go upstairs to the other office and be like,
that's a good place to be. I never had that.
It's really great because these girls are like my best friends.
That's good. Alrighty, so thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be
here. I was gonna say where can they find you, but
I'm going to America.
Find me on the internet.
Find him everywhere. Google.
Yeah.
Because he's literally.
Guys, make sure you get the book.
Yeah, On the Other Side of Freedom, it's Race and Justice in a Divided America.
It's America. Be amazing. Thank you so this much. This is America. For joining us.
Make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Acast.
I was saying I applied for my ESTA today.
That's more important than our social media handles.
Yeah.
I imagine.
Me and Derek are going to pull you up when I go to Miami.
Yeah.
Like, when are you going to go to Miami?
I've never been to Miami.
Oh my God. So, I mean, I haven't either.
Why are you going to Miami?
I've been to Orlando.
Apparently, there's something called Memorial Weekend. I didn't even know what that was.
Apparently, there's something called Memorial Weekend.
Yeah, I thought
Weekend.
It was like just, you know.
But why are you going? You're going for like a vacation?
Her birthday.
Yeah, my birthday.
Got it.
So going with a few friends. So yeah,
you would enjoy it.
I
nice.
I wonder if there's black people in Miami.
I'm sorry.
Like loads of them, because like, my friend went and they were like, "There's loads of like Hispanic people."
And a load of Cubans.
Yeah, and I was like, "Ooh." Ding 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 ding. Interesting. Anyways,
we everywhere.
Fantastic.
I'm sure there's loads of black people in Miami.
New York is amazing.
I really need to go.
You need to go. I'm gonna go again because I was like, "Listen, I have not had it like enough."
They have gay parties,
and they're just black people. And day parties, love day parties. I love
day parties are really much a new thing in London.
In London, but in like, America, in New York, oh my God, it's great for me because I like to go to bed at like 10:30. So it's just like, oh,
yeah,
brilliant.
I like the fact that it seems like you can do anything at any time of the day in New York. Like literally,
you can.
If you wanted to go to the cinema at 2:30 in the morning because you're bored, you can just go. Like,
shopping. You're like, I need a new laptop cord. It's like 4 a.m. You're like, oh, go to the store. It's great.
See, we don't even have it. Like, everything's shut. Like, what? Shut up. Late is 2 a.m.
What I did realize about America is everything's just so much bigger. The pavements or sidewalks bigger. Roads are bigger.
Yeah.
Everything's big. Like, even their transport system is big. I come in, like, when I came back and I was stepping into the tube, I was like, oh, my goodness. This place is tiny.
It's tight. Yeah. That's what I was in there last night. I'm like, ooh, this is a little tight.
Yeah.
The subways are like, people packed in like sardines.
Yeah.
Those little boys.
Yeah.
They smell a little worse. I mean, y'all's a little cleaner. Yeah. I was like, ooh, it's a very clean place.
Yeah.
Everyone says
New York is not very clean.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah.
But the dirt becomes a part of the like appeal. You know, you're like, okay. Okay, rat, I saw you. Okay.
Like, I'm not sure. If I was ever to see a mouse on the actual train, I think I might
just... You won't see a mouse. You see a rat.
That's what I'm saying. In London, there's mice
I've seen mice on the tube.
I've
seen mice on, like, the
tracks. I've seen them on the tracks and I've seen them on the platform. They see them on the train, I'm losing my shit.
On the train, because those heavens think they run this shit.
Oh, no, the pigeons actually know when to get off or when to sit. They literally just mind their business.
They're like, we need to go. Next stop.
Like, me too. I'm on here too. Click, click. Okay. Right. All right, cool. So at Mostly Lit on Twitter, Mostly Lit Pod on Instagram. You can find me, Alex Reads, anywhere.
You can find me, Ray for a Feek, basically everywhere.
You can find DeRay everywhere else. Catch you guys later.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.